Welcome back, I guess. I don't know about you, but I am tired of sitting around here picking my nose, waiting to figure out what to do next. We finished the Hemingway list read along a few months ago, but maybe like 6 months ago now, and I turned off the microphone after nearly 5 days of daily podcasting. That's like nearly 2,000 days of turning on the microphone every single day and talking to you all. And then, finished the project, turned off the microphone, and just left it off for several months, and now here I am. I'm back because I love it here. Talking about books, being a book person, which is primarily how I think of myself. So we're back, but we're gonna do like we're gonna pivot. That's the word. We're gonna pivot. It's no longer a daily read-along podcast. We're not gonna read through books recommended by Hemingway anymore. The audiobook and classic literature parts of the podcast be gone. Right now, of course, though, we'll stay in the back catalog. If anyone wants to read back through those books or listen back, they'll be there. But from today, it'll be something like the Andalouis podcast. Now, who am I without my classic books, right? Like, I know people weren't tuning into this podcast for me. They were tuning in for, Tolstoy and Hemingway and, other classic writers. But I don't feel like it's too bold of me to pivot in this way because, well, the reason I did this project here in the first place is because I'm a book person. I love books. I love talking about books. And I actually teach creative writing. I have done for many years, well beyond the 5 years of this project. I'm a writer myself. I've written a few novels. And it's just the place that I love to be, right? Surrounded by books and surrounded by people interested in stories, characters, interesting settings. And that's, I think, what we are interested as people. Like, there was some poll done about, like, what do people like to do in their spare time, on their annual leave or that kind of thing. And the number one answer was, like, travel. The number two answer, I think, was reading books. And I think, and then the third one was, like, kind of, like, I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was sort of like socializing or meeting people or something like that. And it just makes me think that without books, books aside, as humans, we love settings, right? That's why we travel, to go into a new place and explore it. And so settings are super powerful. And then the other thing we love to do as people is meet people and explore people, get to know them. And that's something we're endlessly fascinated with. I think even the people that are closest to us, you always have this sense that, like, as much as you know about someone, right? It could be your own mother. You always still have the sense that there are things about that person that you don't know. And that will always be the case. Everyone has their inner secrets, their inner thoughts, their guarded parts of their self, maybe their history. So that's what we love to do, isn't it? As people, we get to know places, we get to know people, and we explore. And that's why we read books. I think, I always think of Hogwarts, right? Like, when I reread Harry Potter, it's not so much to relive the plot. And it's not really to hang out with Harry and his friends. The main reason for me is to explore Hogwarts, just to hang out in Hogwarts for a while, right? Feel like I'm in that setting. Anyway, what am I talking about? I just dove straight into just talking ramblings. But anyway, I'm very passionate about talking about books and I teach it. That's why I teach it. And I could just talk to you for hours about things like whatever I was just rambling on about. I would love to occasionally get some other authors on here to chat to, or just sort of creative people. I love the process of creativity, I should say, and sort of expression and imagination. So yeah, we'll try to get some people on. Writing for me, the here's why I think you as a listener and I are kindred, right? Because we're people who have vast imaginations, and this feeling like once you tap into that imagination of your own, you know, your creative energy, and you sort of turn off that cerebral part of your brain that overthinks things and just let the creativity flow in its most natural, unabated form, it starts to feel limitless, like you could just pluck things from that void endlessly and just put them on the page. And I don't know, I love the freedom of that. And that's why writing for me is my creative expression of choice, right? Like there's so many different art forms you could do. You can dance, you can play music, you can paint, you know, it goes on and on. But for me, writing is the one where we can just create anything that pops into our imagination, and there's no filter, or filter isn't the word, there's no limit. So let me give you an example. Let's say I'm a musician and I can imagine in my head this beautiful song. I may not be able to create what's in my head out into the world because of maybe my skill set as a musician isn't, you know. So let's say, for example, I'm imagining this full symphony orchestra in the background of my song. Well, I don't have access to a full symphony orchestra, and I can't play the, you know, 50 instruments that are part of that orchestra, so I can't create what I'm imagining. And so same with maybe painting, like I can picture a beautiful picture in my head, but then when I try to commit it to the canvas, I'm limited by the fact that I suck at drawing, right? So for me, writing is this direct imagination to created thing pathway. Whatever I imagine, I can commit to paper using just one tool, and that's words. And then, boom, I have created the thing that I'm imagining. And no matter how strange, bizarre, or complex the thing is that I'm imagining, I can always represent it on the page just with words. I don't need to, you know, go and learn violin and oboe to create it. So for people like us, I'm assuming that's appealing, you know, that thing of just tapping into creativity and letting it flow and just saying, I don't even know where that's coming from, but it's flowing from somewhere in my mind out through my fingertips. And then that unfiltered imagination can then be downloaded by another person into their brain, and boom, they're experiencing your creative energy. It's just so direct. It's so visceral. I love it. I absolutely love it. That's why I'm a writer. And you may not be a writer, but I feel like the sentiment behind what I've just said, if that touches you in some way and you feel that energy, you're in the right place. And that's all I want to do on this podcast is just explore, right? Explore our minds and just talk about our ideas for stories, or talk about some different lessons or food for thought, I should say, about creativity. I'd love to give you some more examples, and I will. I've got endless ones. You know, I'm always coming up with lessons, I guess they are, that I can divulge to, you know, the young people that I teach about writing. And sometimes I make them really complex and strange and almost like abstract, but it's not to teach them how to write. It's just to give them food for thought, which can unlock something in your fingertips and get those fingers typing. I'm going to have a pause here. Because my brain is just sudden. My brain kind of ebbs and flows where it builds up steam and then it just goes. It's because I have ADHD. So I'm going to pause. I'll be back in a second. All right, I'm back. Did a few laps of the kitchen and just let my brain, you know, flow back in. I have these lulls in brain activity where I just knew that if I kept recording, I was just going to have a lot of ums and ahs for the next few minutes. So I'd spare you that. But I did think of a couple of things to talk about. off the back of what we were just talking about, this is interesting. I guess I could say working on a novel, and it's not the novel that I want to tell you about. It's more the process behind it. So I've got this document on my, you know, just on my phone, on Drive, and it's kind of like chapter one of a very strange novel. I guess you would think of it that way. But what it is at night when my kind of, you know, nightly routine is we jump in bed, I watch TV, you know, my partner goes to sleep, she's asleep about an hour before me every night. So I'm just watching TV for a while and then I'll read. And I grab my book and I'll read whatever I'm reading until the point where I'm 99% asleep. And then as my eye, you know, you can't keep your eyes open. You know when you can't keep your eyes open, but you just want to finish that chapter, and then it just like the end of that chapter seems to stretch further and further away as you get closer and closer. You just cannot get there with your eyes open. At that point, I put the book down and I grab my phone and I open up that document. And I continue writing from wherever I was up to. And the thing I love about it is it taps straight into, it's almost like I'm transcribing semi-dreams at this point. It becomes very... you know, I was saying about like not being too cerebral when you're writing and trying to access your imagination. It's like there's no cerebral activity whatsoever. I'm like nearly asleep and I'm just transcribing these fragmented dream-like thoughts. But there is sort of a plot and there is a thing that's happening and a theme within the chapter. So it's got a little bit of structure, but it's super fragmented and disjointed and dreamlike. And I just love it. I don't know if the book is absolute rubbish or sheer brilliance. It's not sort of, you know, my main novel that I'm working on. It's just something that I do, you know, every night before sleep. And I'm literally getting like 100 words a day, if that, of progress, because it's just the last few seconds of brain activity that I have before I go to sleep. But I just really love some of the strange word choices that my brain plucks out of the ether when I'm in that state. I'll give you one example. I won't bore you too long because I know this is not why you're here, but one bit that really struck me. Let me just open it up and scroll through. This paragraph is, the guy is talking about, you know, he's in tremendous pain. He's surrounded by these kind of faceless people who he doesn't know, and but because he's in pain, he feels very isolated by his pain. You know, you can't really share your pain with others. It's you feel lonely when you are gripped with like agony, in a way. So that's what the paragraph is describing, and he sort of says, "Your universe extends only so far as your lips. You're stricken by your own sounds, guttural and desperate. You can make it no further from yourself than that. It never becomes a beautiful room to dance in." And that's the sentence that I wanted to tell you. For some reason, 99% asleep, my brain wrote, "It never becomes a beautiful room to dance in." And now I can't tell you what that means. I don't know what that means. It's kind of nonsense. But also, I like it. You know, in some strange way, it's like, it feels like it means something. And it also kind of feels like it means what I'm describing, that loneliness, or not loneliness exactly, but like the isolation you feel when you are in agony, because even if people are bending down around you in sympathy or empathy trying to help you, it's like their empathy can only extend so far. You can't feel like pure gripping agony through empathy. So you do feel like no one else is here with me right now when you are in those moments. And it never becomes a beautiful room to dance in, I guess, right? So anyway, like I said, I don't want to share, I'm not really trying to share the novel with you, just the method. It's a really interesting method, and I would encourage you to try it. Maybe if your creative expression might not be writing, but whatever it is, you know, if you can take a paintbrush to your bedside table and spend those last few seconds consciousness painting, then, you know, see what happens. It's almost like, you know what it's like, they talk about entering that flow state. It's a little bit similar to that, whereas like, because it does feel like just pure subconsciousness flowing straight to your fingertips, and there's no part of your brain that filters it and goes, hey, that doesn't make any sense. It just comes out. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, I don't know if that was maybe not interesting at all to you. There was one other thing. I am going to pause again because, you know, like I said, my brain does suck a bit, and I'm going to come back in a second and I'm going to tell you another interesting thing. Okay, I'm back. Made myself a little cuppa. That'll help. You know, I quite like this method of whenever I feel like my brain's about to tap out, I'll just press pause and spare you that. I wish I could do that in daily life, in real circumstances. So yeah, I do have another interesting thing to talk about. Endless ones, actually. But the next one, you know, but before I move into the next one, I thought of another thing to say about that previous one. If you, a great use case for that method, you know, utilizing those last few seconds of subconsciousness before you fall asleep, would be poetry, right? Because that can be quite abstract. And that's the novel, quote unquote, that I'm working on is super abstract. My thought is it's disjointed and strange, but if it goes on and on like that for a full novel, and there is a plot there and there is a story, that story and plot will sort of just be conveyed to the reader via almost like osmosis. Like the words will wash over you and they won't all make sense, but they will feel like they make sense. And then the story will just sort of present itself through that noise, like a magic eye painting. Will that work? I don't know. Probably not, but that's my thoughts behind it. And like I said, it's not the novel that I'm working on. It's just something I do in those last few minutes before I go to sleep. And I'll continue to do that until it's a full novel. Anyway, okay, next topic, Alfred Adler and his fictional final goal. What does any of that mean, you ask? It's super interesting. Now, this is one of the lessons that I've been teaching through Launchpad, which is my creative writing club. It's a very abstract and theoretical lesson, but I love to talk about it because it's one of those food for thought type things. Here's how it came about. Here's how I learned about this before I tell you what it is. A buddy of mine named Dr. Collette, I went to school with him, and then he skyrocketed into a super smart dude. Actually, he was always a super smart dude, but he became the professor of psychology at RMIT University. And I got him on the Launchpad podcast to talk about creative writing and sort of pick his brains about it. Now, he's not a creative writer, but I asked him the question, you know, as creative writers, we pride ourselves on our ability to create a fictional person, to invent a person. And it's a fascinating and it's a fun exercise because there's so much complexity in a person and you want them to feel real. But at the same time, you know that people, real people, don't really make sense. So you have to mix in a bit of like this duplicitous nature of people where they can oppose themselves or you know, be sort of paradoxical within their own views or actions. It's really, really interesting and engaging to undertake as an exercise, creating a fictional person because, yeah, like I said, people don't make sense. So how do you make something that doesn't make sense but with the goal of making it feel real? And I said duplicitous, which is a nice word, but it's more than that because it's not duplicitous, I guess, I think, means like two opposing natures or sentiments, but people are sort of multiplicitous. It can be far more than two. You know, how many sides to someone can there be? Even when you really feel like you know someone, you know, your own mother, or, you know, whoever, you know them, but there's always that sense of, but you don't know everything about them. You know, there's always something hidden in someone by the nature of the fact that people's thoughts and secrets and pasts remain inside them. Anyway, okay, so what was I saying? Yeah, so I spoke to Dr. Collette, James is his name, and I asked him, as a psychologist, You understand what makes people tick. If you were tasked with creating or inventing a fictional person with the goal of making him feel like a real person, what tools would you use from your psychologist's toolkit to help with that? And he loved that question, and he thought about it, and one of the answers he gave me was about Alfred Adler, a psychologist from, you know, the late 1800s, early 1900s, who came up with a theory called fictional final goal. Now, what is that, and how can it help us invent a character? So Adler had this theory that people all have, to some degree, an idea of like who is their ultimate end goal of who they're going to eventually become when they finish, you know, becoming who they are, which is a task that always seems like it's in the distant horizon, right? Like we're always changing towards something, especially when we're younger. But even through, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, you always feel like you haven't quite reached your final form yet. And so everyone has a mental picture of what that final form is. So maybe you think, you know, when I grow up, I'll be a nice, kindly old man on a rocking chair in my veranda on a small farm that I own with, you know, chickens and grandchildren running around, and I'll be smoking a pipe and reading a book, you know. Okay, so you're building this image of like, yeah, that's who I'm slowly turning into. Or, you know, your image might be completely different from that. It might be, you know, you're a grizzled ex-cop who now has a mission to the space station to solve a like, I don't know. It can be very different. That everyone has this picture of like, that's vaguely where I'm going. Now, everyone's fictional final goal also has these other spectrums that they exist within, and there's two of them. The first one is, how clear is that mental image? So for some people, the image that they think of when they picture who they're becoming in their fictional final goal is very clear. They can really just nail it. You know, they've got a very solid idea of who they will be. And for others, it might be very foggy. They don't really know what's their North Star that they're drifting towards. And they don't know themselves as well, I suppose you could say. And the other one, the other spectrum, is how realistic or achievable is that goal? So the one I just described of a fellow on his rocking chair in a small farm with grandchildren, you know, pretty achievable for the average person. Well, male, I should say. Probably not going to be a grandfather. Well, actually, you know, that's wrong to say as well. You know, you can be... Okay, sorry. That's an aside. I hope I didn't offend anyone there. But what I mean to say is like the goal itself is, you know, within the realm of achievable goals for a life. Whereas if you want to be a space astronaut crime badass, then that's possible. Of course, anything's possible. But is it as realistic? Maybe not. And so there's that spectrum of how achievable is your fictional final goal. And then there's those two things. Now, if both of those are maxed out, in meaning like one, you've got a really clear goal of who you want to be, and it's also very achievable, then you are maxed out on that level. Whereas if it's the flip side, it's not very achievable, and also it's very foggy and you don't know exactly what you're aiming for, then you're at the other end. And okay, so what does that mean for a character? It means this. We all react to anything happening based on those spectrums, based on those parameters, I should say. And especially things that are unexpected. So let's say you experience an unexpected trauma and you're just absolutely knocked to your feet. You don't know who you are anymore. You don't know how you're going to recover from this trauma, right? We've all experienced like heavy grief or, you know, something like that, that just knocks you. You just can't be yourself anymore. And you've got to somehow navigate through this storm of confusion and get your life back on track, right? And someone who has a very clear and a very achievable fictional final goal is much more able to get through that grief and back on track, because they have a clearer picture of where they're trying to get. So when your path gets you know, decalibrated and you get knocked off your path, it's easier to find your way back to your path if it was a clear picture at the end of that path. Whereas someone on the other end whose fictional final goal is very unachievable and very foggy, when they get knocked off their path, they might not ever get back on it because it's so foggy to begin with, right? And so it's an exercise in, okay, so when your character experiences, you know, one of the big reveal moments of the novel or traumatic moment or something like that, how will they respond? How clear is their fictional final goal? Or even as an exercise, what is your character's fictional final goal? And if you were to give it a spectrum of 1 to 10 on both of those parameters, how likely is it to, you know, how achievable is it and how clear is it for them? Where would they sit on those parameters from, you know, 1 to 10 or whatever? And so as a character development tool, isn't that a fascinating thing to do? Like if you pluck a character out of your mind, you know, anyone, yeah, Harry Potter, we've already, you're probably familiar with, we're already familiar with that character. And then you would try to say, okay, what would Harry's fictional final goal be? And where would you rate those two parameters for him? And how might that affect his decision-making as we move through the novel? What an interesting way to, you know, when you create a character, people often create sort of a character profile, and it might be a little manila folder with everything they can think of about that character tucked into it on loose pieces of paper, from their eye color to, you know, their stats, their min-maxed stats. And, you know, one more piece of paper to stuff into that manila folder would be your analysis of their fictional final goal. Anyway. I find that fascinating. It's again, it's not a lesson that you must take on if you want to be a great writer or anything like that. It's just fodder, right? It's really good food for thought. And it's something that you can do that for all the characters in your book that you're writing, if you are writing a book. And if you're not writing a book, I just feel like, even if I wasn't an author, I like to think I would still find that pretty interesting. All right, brain lull. Going to hit pause and let my brain bounce back from all that talking. All right, brain break over. Yeah, I think that's probably a good first episode of the Andrew Lewis podcast. I'll end by saying, actually, I'll take a few more minutes. I released a novel in 2020. I worked on that novel for 5 years. It's my best work, you know. I'm not afraid to say that. I'm really proud of it. But I released it in 2020 originally. And it just sort of disappeared into the noise because that was right smack bang in the middle of a bunch of lockdowns in our country. And, well, around the world. But especially in Melbourne, Australia, we were very much locked down. So a very silly thing to do to release it then. And then it just sort of sat there for a few years, 3 years, in the background. And a few reviewers read it, which was great. Got some good reviews, but other than that, there was no real launch. Recently, I've revisited the novel and made a few small updates and re-released it. And so the way I'm framing it in my mind, and this is a bit of creative liberty, but authors often release a book as an ARC, A-R-C. It's called Advanced Reader's Copy, and they do that to get early reviews and to get early feedback on their book and make changes if they want to before doing the final release. And now what I'm doing is thinking of that 2020 release as the arc, because there never was an arc for this book. I just released it straight with no test readers or anything. I just wrote it and put it out. So that was the arc. Then nothing happened with it for a few years because of COVID and because I had a baby and because of family stuff and career stuff and all that. Recently, I revisited it. I made a few small changes and I re-released it. And I want to give it the push it deserves, because I really did put heaps, I put my heart and soul into that novel, and it's just a shame for it to sort of disappear like that. So it's on Amazon now. It's on Kindle and it's on Amazon as a paperback, and it's called Personal Fable. It's by me, Andrew Lewis. So if you want to have a read, I'd love for you to have a read. It's available there, and I appreciate it if you do. If you don't, completely understand that as well. Why do I say that? Why do I feel compelled to say that at the end of, you know, just trying to humbly put out my own work in that way? I think I've earned the right to, advertise, if that's what you want to call it. Oh, I get so nervous talking about my own writing and trying to, you know, spruik my own book, but I really do feel like it's a worthy book. It's inspired by authors such as Tim Winton, if you know him. He's a great literary fiction author here in Australia, far greater than myself, but that's just to say he was one of my chief influences on the style of this book. Hermann Hesse wrote a great book called Steppenwolf, and that was another great influence on my novel. Albert Camus was another influence to some degree. And so I just really feel like it deserves to sit there with books like that. And another one, actually another influence, would be The Catcher in the Rye, because it does have those elements of like a dark coming of age sort of thing. Now, I'm not saying that it's as good as or even similar to any of those novels. I'm just saying my influences for writing it. If you're interested in a thrilling, mysterious literary fiction set in, you know, Australian rural coastal town, check out Personal Fable. I appreciate you listening to the Andalus podcast, and I look forward to just chatting further. If you do decide to try that technique, by the way, of creating something in the last few seconds of your day, let me know how it goes. I'm on Instagram. That's where I mostly am for socials, at Andalus. Drop me a message. I'd love to hear from you. If you've got any ideas for future episodes of this podcast, or if you'd like to be on the podcast or something like that, I'm so open to ideas like that. I just love connecting with book people. I welcome you. Open arms and all the rest. Have a great rest of the day / whatever you're doing. I appreciate you. Catch you in the next one.